stood at rest, his heavy bolter hanging loosely from his hands. The metal of its barrel pinged softly as it cooled. He and his brothers were spread out among the mortal soldiers. Gert stood to the rear of the bulwark, ready to lend support where needed, while Kaln was crouched atop the gate itself, warding the fire team's position there. Ord had the honour of the centre, where his arc of fire would not be too badly hampered. Thus far, they had encountered little more than chaff, chanting lunatics clad in stolen fatigues, carrying weapons outdated even by the standards of a backwater world like this. They showed little discipline and little inclination to do anything more than rush to their deaths, singing foul hymns. Ord suspected that had he and his brothers not been there, it might have been enough. Numbers counted for more than most would admit. Gert made a sound, not quite a cough. Ord glanced at him, but said nothing.
"We have not heard from the lieutenant in several hours," Gert said after a moment.
There was a brief hesitation before the word lieutenant. Only a space marine would have noticed. Only an Imperial Fist would have known what it meant.
"So we hold," Ord said. "Those are our orders." "Places us to the back," Cal murmured. "Takes his own kind forward. There are less than 50 of us to cover the gates of the upper city. He commands the defence of the main thoroughfare, as is his right as our commander."
Ord turned slightly, looking up at Cal's yellow form, standing atop the gate.
"Or do you question his strategy?" "Not his strategy," Gert said.
Ord snorted.
"At least you have the sense to keep your murmurings to the vox."
It would not do for the mortals to hear such things.
"'Tis I am not a fool, brother."
"Only a fool claims not to be a fool," Ord said. "Save your mutterings for afterwards, brother. It will make entertaining listening at the victory feast."
"You're assuming we'll survive?"
"I always do."
"The odds are not in our favour."
"When are they ever?"
Ord glanced up at Gert.
"I have no intention of dying. Do you? If so, please let me know, so that I may adjust our strategies accordingly."
Gert's reply was lost in a haze of static. Ord was about to ask him to repeat himself when he heard something amidst the crackle.
"Blasted atmospheric disturbance!"
Gert's voice broke in suddenly.
"Quiet!" Ord snarled. "Listen."
He heard it again. Not across the vox this time, but out in the open, on the wind. A sharp, slithery sound, and then the clop of hooves, many of them racing through broken streets, faster and nearer with every moment. An unsettled murmur ran through the red-clad soldiers as the air took on a greasy tang. Ord heard a hiss. He looked down. The blood that coated the street was bubbling. Fat orbs swelled and burst, releasing a fragrant stench. Things like plump, red maggots writhed within them, twisting and stretching. A sound like claws scratching at stone echoed across the street, as the clop of hooves grew louder and louder. A nearby voxcaster gave a squeal, and laughter emerged from it. A guttural flood of brutal obscenities followed, until a panicked soldier switched it off. Ord grunted.
"Something new." "Demons!" Gert said.
The word sent a chill through Ord. Not fear, not exactly, but uncertainty. As if he stood on a crumbling ledge, with no sign that it would take his weight. Demons. Some of his brothers thought them mere psychic phenomena. Murderous phantoms conjured by witches. Others thought them something else entirely. Regardless, they knew neither fear nor fatigue. Even orcs would eventually flag and retreat, if you killed enough of them. But demons didn't. They just kept coming. There was only one way to effectively resist them, and that was to lay down enough fire to keep them at bay. His hands tightened on the grips of his heavy bolter.
"Yes, many of them."
Kaln grunted.
"I could smell them from here, like sour blood and verdigris."
He paused.
"Should we withdraw?"
He asked the question hesitantly. Ord didn't reply. His auto-sensors fuzzed and wept, unable to acclimate as the air twisted and steamed. The blood on the street was climbing the walls somehow, painting an improbable crimson corridor up to the edge of the Pilgrim's Gate. In the red steam of its boiling, he saw phantom shapes twist, as if in agony.
I knew something, like chains or blades or...
Gert began.
Ignore it, Ord said flatly. A witch's tricks. Have faith, brother.
Faith is the wall of the soul and the gate of the mind,
Caln recited.
Every shot of prayer, every blade a hymnal,
Gert added.
We are his fists, clad in mail, and our blows are his,
Ord said softly.
Ready yourselves, brothers. They want our gate. I do not think we will let them have it.
He raised his heavy bolter.
Not easily, at any rate.
Almes, Primus Asteroid Facilities. Reyes was frightened. Not the familiar sort of fear. The kind you got when you were hanging over a shaft, your harness slipping and the lumens too dim to show you the bottom. This was more visceral. The air tasted wrong. Like poison. She wasn't the only one who was afraid. Desh was, too. The enforcer had practically sweated through his uniform, but like her, he kept firing. She glanced at him, and he met her gaze. He wasn't so bad for an enforcer. Better than Galba. He gave her a smile, a quick, weak thing, but comforting nonetheless. She tried to muster her own, but it didn't come. The ore-processing chamber echoed with the sounds of battle, the sounds of dying. She heard a roar and saw a red-armoured warrior hurl one of her miners against an outcropping of machinery. The traitor space marine turned as a fusillade of bolt-gun fire struck him, driving him back against the wall. He staggered forward a few uncertain steps before slumping and toppling over. The sight gave her some hope. If monsters like that could die... then maybe they could win. Maybe.
Reloading!
Desh said, dropping down behind the bank of industrial cogitators they were using as cover. Reyes fired over the top of the bank, covering him as he reloaded his combat shotgun. Around her, miners and enforcers moved up through the chamber, but slowly, hesitantly. They could all feel it. Something was coming. She felt it on her skin, like the hint of rain. Her autogun clicked, and she dropped to her haunches.
"Reloading!"
she said, ejecting the ammunition drum. She reached for another as Desh took her place in the firing line. She fumbled at her gear belt, her fingers tracing across her plasma cutter before she found what she was looking for. The drum was covered in passages from the Lectitio Divinitatis. And it seemed only fitting, given the enemy. Old Father Zebus had done it for all of them, every miner, even a few of the enforcers. The missionary was too old to fight, had been too old to fight for a decade or more, but he knew his scripture. As she clicked the new drum in place, she peered around the cogitator bank. The chamber had been desecrated. That was the only word for it. Bodies were stacked in the corners, and blood slathered everything. The walls and floor stank like nothing she'd ever smelled before. And something else. There was a sound, faint, under the roar of gunfire and the screaming, but it was persistent, like metal, scraping on stone. Or laughter. It was getting louder, no matter how much she tried to pretend otherwise. Something was coming. At the center of the chamber, the air had taken on a watery tinge. One of the traitors stood there, his hands raised, his voice echoing hoarsely over the sounds of battle. Nearby, one of the Raven Guard hung from a web of chains. The Space Marine, Spyros, was dead. Reyes hoped he was, at least. His chest had been torn open, the black carapace hanging in bloody tatters, and the thickened ribcage split. The traitor Space Marine had plucked something from his chest and was holding it aloft, as if it were an offering. Beyond him, she could see Karos and several other Raven Guard fighting their way towards the center of the chamber. The air convulsed. She felt her stomach twist. Desh cursed.
Did you feel that?
"It's happening," she said. She didn't know what it was. She didn't understand, but she knew it had to be stopped. Before Desh could argue, she darted into the open, ducking past combatants. Lazrounds plucked at the floor around her feet. She could hear Desh cursing as he hurried after her. The air had turned thick. She could feel things moving through it, just out of sight. Something giggled in her ear. One of the traitors lurched into view, roaring. She ducked past the giant, not stopping. She raised her autogun, taking aim at the chanting legionary. She knew her autogun wouldn't hurt him, but she had to try. Immaterial claws scratched at her, and the giggling became urgent whispers. She saw him lift something glistening and wet, and a light grew, shining, spiraling an ugly light, too bright, and the whispering became a roar. She fired. There was a sound like a bell, tolling in the deep. For a moment, the air turned to fire, and she couldn't breathe. She heard screaming, not human, but something else. She saw the traitor staggering, smoke rising from him, as if he'd clutched a grenade to himself and it had gone off. He turned, and for an instant, their eyes met. She froze. There was so much hatred there. Raw, animal hate, not just for her, but for who she was and all she represented. She raised her gun again, but before she could fire, she heard the wet scrape of meat on stone. The world stuttered to a halt. A stink like fresh spilled offal washed over her. She turned, slow, too slow. A mountain of muscle and metal rose over her, its face impossibly beautiful. She saw a massive blade sweep back and knew it would split her skull, and there was nothing she could do about it. Nothing at all. Karos shoved her aside, dislocating her shoulder with the force of his blow. She cried out as she hit the ground and lost her grip on her weapon. She saw the monster's blade fall, and Karos's hand spun away in a spiral of red. The Raven Guard made no sound as he shoved his bolt pistol into the thing's chest and pulled the trigger until the weapon was dry. The monster roared and smashed Karos to the ground. It whipped its blade up, ready to strike the prone space marine. But a combat shotgun roared, and the monster whirled with a shriek. She saw Desh stumble back. The enforcer fired again and again, pumping shot after shot into the advancing creature. It reached for him, and he flung himself back. As it made to lunge after him, Karos leapt onto its back, his wounded limb wrapped around its throat. It dropped its blade and clawed at him, tearing great, sparking gouges in his armor. Reyes smelled the acrid stink of transhuman blood and winced as Karos was slammed into the floor hard enough to split the ferrocrete. She was on her feet by then, arm numb, but she had her plasma cutter. The tool spat and flamed as she thumbed the activation rune. The monster turned, and she saw that Karos had managed to ram his combat blade into its throat. It wheezed, ichor bubbling from the wound. It bent, reaching for its blade. "No!" she said. The plasma cutter hissed, and the monster screeched as the solid spike of heat burnt through its talon. It swept its good hand at her, and she lurched under the blow, stabbing at it with the cutter. She smelled something like burning oil, and the creature staggered, wailing. Off balance, she hit the ground, jarring her arm. Cursing, she lashed out wildly, scraping the cutter across the beast's legs. It howled and fell. She scrambled back as it flailed at her. It lunged again, and she thrust the plasma cutter into its face. Its momentum carried it into her, and she screamed as it jostled her arm. It twitched, gurgled, lay still. The smell of its dying enveloped her, nearly causing her to pass out. She heard shouting, and then the weight was being levered off her. She saw one of the other Raven Guard, Derren, she thought, rolling the corpse away.
"Do you live, Orlodo Reyes?"
She coughed and nodded. Desh was there a moment later, helping her to sit up.
"You killed it," he said.
He didn't sound shocked, so much as thankful.
"Somebody had to..."
She clutched her arm and cried out, as Desh helped her to her feet.
"Where's Karos?"
Derren stepped aside, and she saw the leader of the Raven Guard laying in a heap. One of the other Space Marines, she thought his name was Chain, was crouched beside him, speaking softly. Chain looked at Darren and shook his head. Reyes fell to her knees beside Karros. They had removed his helm, exposing battered, swollen features. His chest plate had become a concave mess, and she could hear the rasp of his lungs. Blood spilled from the cracks in his armour. One of his eyes had burst, and the remaining one fixed on her. His limbs jerked limply, and she realized that his spine had been broken. His lips twitched, as if he wanted to speak, but he said nothing. No final words, no goodbye, no explanation. His eye dulled, and his breath rattled. A moment later, he was still. Darren dropped to his haunches beside her.
His ribs shattered. Both hearts were pierced. His spine was broken, and they were swelling in his skull.
He spoke calmly, as if Karros had been a stranger. Maybe that was just how they talked about each other.
He saved me.
Darren nodded and rose.
Their leader fled. We will find him.
Reyes struggled to her feet.
I'm coming with you.
Desh was at her side a moment later, steadying her. She caught his hand and squeezed it. Desh returned the gesture. He wasn't so bad, for an enforcer. Darren didn't argue with her.
Give her your people. It is time we finish this hunt.
Elmace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Calder had once heard Dawn describe a siege as 1,000 moments of unseen heroism. Patched into the picture feed that the Raven Guard had given him access to, he witnessed them all, if only out of the corner of his eye. He saw the Crime Lord's stellar drum balance a las carbine atop a shattered windowsill and fire at the demon worshippers, howling in the streets below. She spat orders at her followers, and one of them hefted a missile launcher. There was a red flash, and the street shook from the resulting explosion. Elsewhere, he saw enforcer rumblers skidding through the shattered streets, sirens blaring. They took a sharp turn, swinging around a corner. The assault cannons mounted on their chassis stuttered, and a mass of bodies was reduced to red ruin. The rumblers sped on, rolling easily over the broken corpses. Somewhere to the east, in an alleyway, red uniformed soldiers hurriedly hauled a las cannon into position as a tracked troop carrier rumbled past, unawares. He saw grey armoured battle sisters hurry through the burning ruin of a low-town shrine, the firelight reflected in the visors of their helms. He saw all of this, and more. 1,000 last stands, 1,000 glorious charges, 1,000 deaths. Numbers clicked over as he altered strategies based on these deaths. He did so without setting aside his bolt rifle. Mechanically, he ejected an empty magazine and reached for a replacement, relaying orders across continuously cycling Vox frequencies as he did so.
Lieutenant Gavriel to Sector Tertius, grid marker Omega 9. Reinforce Sergeant Ablett. All available units in Sector Secundus to grid marker Zeta 1. Halt the Eastern Reliquary Boulevard. Tyre, do you copy? Copy, Lieutenant.
Tyre's voice was distorted by static, but intelligible. Ricochets glanced from Calder's battleplate, and a targeting rune flashed. Without turning, he snatched his bolt pistol from its holster and fired. The rune went dark. He holstered the pistol and lifted his bolt rifle.
Status of the procession away!
From the command bunker, Tyre would have access to the full tactical map of the city. He would be following the battle in real time.
Holding! It's mostly chaff. The arch-heretics have not yet shown themselves in any great number, but there are reports of siege weapons advancing to the north. I've already ordered Rucken and Solaro to deal with them. Where's the Cardinal Governor's status?
Eamon was under guard in the command bunker. That was the safest place for him, theoretically.
Anxious. He wants to be out there with a gun himself. I know the feeling. You are both more valuable where you are.
Calder switched over to another channel without waiting for Tyre's reply.
Torag, ETA.
Commencing attack in 3, 2,
I take cover.
1, attack run commenced.
The air cracked with a shrill shriek. The thunder of turbines shook the nearby buildings to their foundations. The wind lashed, and shadows sprang down the thoroughfare. A trio of Storm Talon gunships swept overhead, assault cannons roaring. Impact craters opened in the street and surrounding buildings as the gunships hurtled over the packed masses of the enemy. Splinters of stone struck Calder's armor as he hunkered against the bulwark. The craft split up at the end of the thoroughfare, one continuing on, the others banking northwards and southwards, respectively. Calder heard the rumble of missile impacts from nearby side streets as the Storm Talons continued to strafe the enemy positions. He caught the top of the bulwark and leapt over.
Come! We're they preoccupied!
Kenric and the rest of the intercessors followed. Despite the wind and dust, his helm's auto-sensors pinpointed the survivors, limning them in blue.
They're pulling back, Kenric said. Then we press them, Calder said. Keep moving!
Vox clicks of assent were the only replies. He grunted in satisfaction. The intercessors spread out in a battle line. Groups of 3 leapfrogged one another, 2 space marines to the front, a 3rd moving in support. Calder waved 2 groups off, and they moved into support positions along the edges of the thoroughfare, among the fallen pillars and shattered shopfronts. Behind him, he knew Canonus Law would be tightening the line, readying the defences for another assault. The Battle Sisters were still singing, their voices roughened by strain and dust. The defenders had survived mostly intact, a few casualties, but within optimum limits. So long as they held the processional way, the enemy could be contained. If the enemy could be contained, they could be isolated and dealt with. His strategy was proving correct. But something felt wrong. A wounded cultist lurched to his feet, blade in hand. He wept as he hacked at Calder. The Primaris caught the blow on his forearm and drove the stock of his bolt rifle into the mortal's bloody head. The man sank down, still weeping. Calder kicked him onto his back and stepped on his neck, silencing him. He paused, looking out over the street. Something felt wrong. Was there something he'd missed? Something he'd overlooked? He ran through his strategy, wondering if he'd somehow underestimated the enemy. An explosion drew his eyes skyward. A 2nd followed. Artillery. The spires of the Cathedral Palace shook, and the streets shuddered with them.
Pilgrim's Gate! Status!
He said. As he spoke, he knew there would be no answer. There was smoke to the north. The Pilgrim's Gate had fallen.
Primaris! There are ships inbound!
Calder stiffened.
Clarify!
Gunships!
Torag repeated. The white scars sounded chagrined.
They blew past us!
Which landing zones?
Are you deaf? I said that they are inbound. They are not going to your landing zones, Imperial Fist. They are coming to you.
Chapter 25 95-50-00 Almace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Klaxons filled the interior of the gunship. Amatnim grinned and looked at Apis, sitting across from him in his own restraint throne.
"Remind you of anything, brother?"
Apis's laugh was a harsh growl.
"The drop on Vetra's City. A good day."
The gunship shook as it hurtled through the Ferrocrete canyons of the upper city. A web of automated flak batteries filled the air with death and noise. Through his display, he could see gunships fall, burning from the sky, ploughing into the streets below. Some exploded on impact, others made it down intact. The voices of the survivors filled Abatnim's Voxlink. He didn't bother to make contact. They knew what to do.
Granted, we had air support at Vectra City,
Apis said, as the gunship convulsed. Smoke filled the compartment.
And this time, we're the air support,
Amatnim said.
That's what worries me.
The tenor of the klaxons changed then, becoming shrill. The gunship shook, every plate and rivet clattering. Its engine snarled in protest, and Imatinim felt the reverberation of its assault cannons. He blink-clicked a rune on his helm display and opened a channel to the gunship's pilot.
"Status! It's getting hot out here, my lord! They've got interceptors in the air! We outgun them, but they're fast! I think they've realized what our intentions are!
Are they fast enough to stop us?
Only if the gods will it! Maintain course!"
Imatinim cut the link. He looked at Apis.
"We'll be there soon. And then, my lord, and then we end this."
He looked at the others who occupied the hold. A full cohort, 20 brothers of the Legion. The other gunships held the same. Every brother not required elsewhere was here, at the spear point. How many of them would survive? Imatinim found that he didn't care, so long as the quest was successful. So long as he found what and who he'd come for. No sacrifice was too great. The gods were at his shoulder, and he tasted the honey-sweet tang of victory on his lips. Apis laughed abruptly. Imatinim looked at him.
"Something funny, brother. Lacomhu will be sorry he missed this."
Imatinim frowned. "He will get over it."
"I doubt that."
Apis leaned forward.
"I spoke to the pilot of his gunship. The Dark Apostle will not leave the asteroid belt alive."
Imatinim was silent for a moment. He had not given the order, but that mattered little in the scheme of things. He nodded.
"Then the gods have made their choice," he said slowly.
He had not expected Apis to show such initiative, and it bothered him slightly. But there would be time to deal with such matters later.
"Approaching target!" came the pilot's voice. "Taking heavy fire!"
Imatinim could hear it, rattling against the hull. Smoke billowed, filling the hold. He felt the gunship begin its descent at speed. He smiled beneath his helm.
"Gloria Aeterna, brothers!"
Then, impact. Imatinim had been in crashes before. It had been distressingly common in the latter days of the Great Crusade. Even so, one never got used to it. It was at once a sudden convulsion and cessation. Metal buckled and tore. Smoke rose in waves. Heat washed across his armor. He heard cries of pain and shock, and the tooth-rattling growl of a reinforced strut digging through ferrocrete. All of this, all at once, a single moment, stretched to a fine point. A fire was raging through the downed gunship. He tore himself loose from his restraint throne, relying on his auto-senses to see him through the smoke and flames. There had been casualties, but less than he'd feared. He strode past them, leaving them to hang from their thrones, broken bodies lolling. Apis was already up, hammering a fist against the hull, trying to force the ramp to descend.
"It's wedged!"
he voxed.
"Step aside!"
One of the others, Gernt, Imatinim realized, growled. Imatinim hauled Apis back as the other word-bearer charged. Gernt hit the ramp with his full weight, and the bent pneumatics gave way with a shriek. The ramp fell to the broken street, and Gernt rolled down. As he picked himself up, Lasfire danced across his armor. He cursed and fired his bolt gun one-handed. Imatinim thundered down the ramp, already returning fire. The gunship had slammed into the bulwarks at the top of the street, crashing through them like a battering ram. Bodies lay in crumpled heaps, and flames danced along rivers of spilled fuel. The survivors were falling back in good order, and he felt a sort of grudging respect for them. He heard the roar of engines and turned. More gunships raced down, looking for safe landings on the street. All bore the signs of having raced through hell. Hulls scorched and blackened, thrusters smoking. Barely a third of his force had reached the target, but it was more than enough.
"They're regrouping!"
Apis called out. He'd reached the intact bulwarks and was putting them to use against their former owners. Imatinim hurried to join him. Targeting runes flashed everywhere he looked.
"We have to push forward! Keep them under pressure! Grenades!"
Amatnim pulled a frag grenade from his belt and flicked the activator. As he hurled it towards the steps, Apis followed suit. Explosions rocked the street, followed by a deafening roar as the fires reached the gunship's fuel reservoir. Thick, black smoke choked the air. Amatnim stepped past the bulwarks, firing. His auto-sensors pierced the smoke, showing him sketches of movement. He heard heartbeats and the hum of power packs, the whine of servos, shouts, prayers. He pivoted, bolt gun roaring. Apis passed him, firing. More explosions stirred the smoke. Yellow forms loomed suddenly. Amatnim blinked, larger than a legionary, but not unfamiliar. He'd seen them before, though only at a distance. A new weapon for a new age. But old weapons were still just as deadly. One of the newcomers fell immediately, head vaporized by a lucky melter gun blast. The remaining pair split up, using the bulwarks as cover. They moved smoothly into position to either side of the defensive line and opened up on the advancing word-bearers, catching them in a crossfire. The warrior carrying the melter gun was the first to fall. Gurnt was next, his body jerking as shots hammered into him mercilessly, and finally flung him to the ground. He twitched for some moments before finally going still. Apis cursed and sank down behind a bulwark beside Amatnim.
"No way to get around them," he growled. "They're buying time for the others to regroup."
Amatnim could see the mortal defenders retreating up the great stairs that led to the Cardinal's gate. There would be a secondary defensive position there, he knew. It was the way the Imperial Fists thought. There was always a fallback point, always another wall. He ducked back as bolt rounds chewed the top of the bulwark, spattering his helm with splinters of stone.
"If they manage to dig in, it'll be the gods' own luck to drag them out."
Apis signaled to a nearby warrior, whose armor was festooned with sheathed blades.
"Zappa! See if you can flush those yellow curs out of their kennel."
Sapper nodded and motioned to two other word-bearers. They slithered forward, crawling low across the ground, and were soon lost in the smoke. Amatnim watched them go.
"Dusep is still advancing to the north. He should be in position soon."
He scanned the Vox frequencies. Those who'd survived the assault drop were converging on his position. Soon, he would have the reinforcements he needed to breach any defenses that the Imperial Fists had managed to erect.
"Let's hope that the Dark Gods watch over us until then."
Apis peered around the side of a bulwark and fired.
"We'll need their blessings to get past those big bastards."
Amatnim laughed.
"Ha! They are quite large. What do you think they feed them?" "Knowing the Imperials, a tasteless nutrient paste. Sometimes it's not about quality, but quantity."
Amatnim heard a click on the vox. Apis tensed.
"Sapa is making his move. He's a stealthy one. And vicious. That's why I keep him around."
An explosion sent chunks of stone hurtling through the air. Apis rose and Amatnim followed. One of the Imperial Fists was down, his armor smoking and ruptured. The other was turning, firing, stitching shots across the chest plate of one of Sapper's companions. Another word-bearer came out of the smoke, chain blade whirring. The Imperial Fist sidestepped the blow and crunched the stock of his weapon into the word-bearer's helm, knocking him flat. Before he could rise, the bolt rifle thundered, silencing his curses. Apis cursed and lunged. The Imperial Fist spun, faster than Amatnim thought possible, and knocked Apis back against a bulwark. Before their opponent could capitalize, Amatnim drew his axe rake and swung. The blade bit deep, nearly severing the giant's hands at the wrists, and sent the bolt rifle clattering away. The hulking warrior jerked around, nearly dragging the weapon from Amatnim's grip. He tore his axe rake free and hacked at his opponent, finally knocking him to his knees with the flurry of blows. Apis was there a moment later to drive a combat knife into the back of the warrior's neck, in the gap between his helm and gorget. The word-bearer twisted the blade, but the Imperial Fist tried to clamber to his feet regardless.
"He's not dying!"
Apis snarled.
"Sapper! Make him die!"
Sapper appeared, blade in hand. Not a combat knife, but something alien and lethal. It hummed nastily as he slammed it through a gap in the warrior's armor. The imperial fist stiffened and finally slumped. Sapper stepped back, panting.
That did it.
Amatnim looked at the blood coating his axe rake. It smelled different somehow, full of mysteries. He turned, looking up towards the Cardinal's gate. He could see tiny figures moving. The Imperial Fists had succeeded, and there would be more of them up there. Not many, perhaps. He looked down at the body.
Take his head, just to be sure.
He sheathed his blade.
And then we take the Cardinal's gate.
Almace, Primus Asteroid Facilities. Lackamhugh staggered on through the dust of the asteroid surface, through a forest of girders and machinery, forcing himself to stay upright. His remaining warriors moved in his wake, only a handful now. He knew the names of some, Evek, Morn, Feyan, half a dozen others. Loyal servants of Erebus, just like him. He hadn't realized it at the time. Amatnim had sent all of those openly loyal to Erebus with him, perhaps hoping to cull them. Some had died, but those who hadn't were determined to survive. That was what the Sons of Lorgar did best. They survived. Only those who survived tribulations were worthy to serve the gods. And Lackamhugh was worthy. He had failed, but he would survive. He would survive to serve the gods again, if they forgave him. The ritual had been disrupted. Lackamhugh could feel the pain of it inside him. He'd failed, and the gods had extracted a price for it. He felt smashed up inside, as if something had grabbed him by his hearts and lungs and twisted. It was a wonder that he wasn't dead already. Obviously, the gods had other plans for him. Why else would they have spared him? The Raven Guard had come from an unexpected quarter, they and their slaves. He cursed himself for not realizing, for not thinking that they might. Perhaps Amatnim was right. He was no line soldier, no strategist. It had been the slaves that had surprised him. He thought them too cowardly to risk open battle. His hand ached from where the woman had shot the offering from his grip. He looked down at his hand. The blood on it turned to crimson crystals of frost. Twice now he'd failed to call up that which ought never to be put down. He could feel their anger beating at him, pulsing in time to his own heartbeat. They were savage and hungry, and driven to distraction by the sensation of their kin, loosed upon the planet below. They wanted to be free, demanded it. He realized Evek was looking at him. They all were.
I hear them as well, Evek said.
He was a bulky warrior, his armor crudely reinforced in order to contain an inhuman girth. Lackamhugh fancied that soon he'd burst and something glorious would rise from the ruin of him, if he lived long enough.
The gods demand blood to open the way. The only blood we have left is ours,
Lackamhugh said.
And they'll have that soon enough. Contact Decimo. Get one of the gunships down here. We must retreat.
The thought angered him and he coughed. Blood spattered the inside of his helm. Out of the corner of his eye, red markers flashed. The enemy were in pursuit. The image magnified, revealing a trio of ore crawlers closing in. They had reinforced cabs set atop bulky, spider-like legs. Repurposed plasma-cutting tools were mounted on the cabs.
More to our left,
Evek said.
They're closing in.
There, the pumping stations,
Lackamhugh said, gesturing with his Crozius.
Easily defendable position. We'll call for extraction.
The pumping stations made for a makeshift palisade of pistons and slough tanks, nestled among an interwoven thicket of support girders. The word-bearers trudged into cover. The vox crackled and popped with the echoes of encrypted signals. Lackamhugh suspected that meant that the Raven Guard was shadowing them as well.
Fan! Morn, the rest of you, keep watch.
Ivek moved to the edge of the stations, looking towards the landing platform where they'd left the gunships. Lacomhugh joined him. There were flashes of light there. No sound, but Lacomhugh knew the flash of weapons fire.
The gunships aren't responding, Ivek said.
Perhaps they are preoccupied.
Contact!
Theon howled. A spurt of plasma struck one of the girders, nearly cutting through it. Morn and the others began to fire. Lacomhugh drew his pistol and sought cover behind one of the girders, as more lances of plasma struck the pumping stations and support beams. Ivek joined him.
The gunships,
he began.
What about them?
Lacomhugh demanded. A stream of plasma struck Morn, punching the word-bearer from his feet. He convulsed on the ground, clawing uselessly at his melting armor. When he at last lay still, Lacomhugh saw that the plasma had eaten its way right through the bone.
They're taking off without us,
Ivek said. Lacomhugh cursed and leaned around the girder, firing his bolt pistol at the approaching ore crawlers.
Patch me through to them. Now!
They're refusing, my lord.
Lacomhugh snarled in frustration and turned, glaring at the distant shapes of the gunships as they rose into the black, pursued by flashes of light.
Decimo! He growled. I know you can hear me, Decimo. Whatever a Magnum has promised you, I will double it. But only if you cease this foolishness.
Static was his only reply.
Dark Gods, take them!
He roared, slamming his fist into the girder.
What?
He looked up as a shadow passed across the asteroid. Something white and vast moved slowly overhead. The murmur of the Neverborn quieted as the vessel slid across the horizon, filling it end to end. A gunship was caught by a strobe of fire and reduced to drifting motes. Another gunship followed, and another, until all of them were burning, a rain of steel comets. Lacomhugh began to laugh. It seemed that the gods had preserved him again. Almace, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Haldan Datch, commander of the Imperial Fist strike cruiser Capulus, watched as the enemy swarmed over Almace. His tactical feeds brought him information about the status of the closest vessels. Most were damaged in some way. While the orbital defenses had not proven equal to the task of keeping the foe at bay, they had blooded the enemy fleet severely. The Capulus had capitalized on that, as much as it was able. It was not enough. One ship, no matter its pedigree, was not enough. Datch had chosen his battles with care, but time was running out. Outnumbered and outgunned, his ship had sustained too much damage in too brief a time. It remained close to the dockyards, preventing their destruction, but only just. He made his ship a wall, and put it between Almace and the enemy. But every wall eventually fell. The enemy vessels had begun to peel away from Almace, seeking new prey. The dockyards made a pretty target. Every vessel that could mount a weapon had been impressed into service. Merchantmen and trade frigates spun in slow contests with pirate vessels in the upper reaches of the stratosphere. The wreckage of the battle cluttered the upper orbits. Great currents of torn metal drifted sunwards, caught in the planet's gravity well. Fighter craft hunted one another through these reefs of shrapnel, dueling savagely in the shadows of the vessels they had launched from.
Bring us a bell!
He growled. At their stations, the bridge servitors bent to obey. Slowly, painfully, the battered cruiser began to turn. Klaxons whined throughout the ship. Smoke choked the corridors of the gunnery decks, and contact had been lost with the starboard launch bays. The command deck was full of heat and sound. He ignored it all. His armor was sealed against heat and the void. The surviving serfs had been evacuated, where possible. Only servitors and battle brothers remained aboard, for the most part. Those who could endure the slow dissolution of the Capulus and keep her in the fight. Dutch gave orders calmly, despite the flames licking across the deck, feasting greedily on the ancient battle standards and sacramental tapestries that rustled loosely in the heat. Soon, it would reach his throne. He estimated that he had another hour before it truly endangered his ability to effectively conduct operations. His tacticum display flickered weakly, but it was still readable.
Jarek, concentrate starboard fire on those troop ships for as long as possible. I want them burning when they reach the troposphere.
The crackle of static was his only reply. He ignored it. Either Jarek had heard him or not. There was little he could do about it either way. On the view screen, the enemy flagship was visible. A vast, crimson nightmare, heaving too through seas of stellar debris. It cruised through the shattered wreckage of lesser ships, smashing them aside, sending the burning hulks spinning slowly away. Its guns spat fire, cutting attack craft from the air. Dutch could hear the cries of the pilots as they died, and his hands curled into fists. He wanted to lash out, but the enemy was too far away, at least for the moment. It had been a battle barge once, he thought. Something beautiful. Now it was twisted and broken, made over into a thing of murder and ugliness. Clean lines broken by ramparts of filth. Orderly decks become gaping maws. A loyal hound gone rabid. Dutch hated it, as he had never hated anything else. He wanted to kill it, more than he had ever wanted to kill anything else. But he knew that he could not. It was too strong, even wounded as it was. All he could do was bleed it more, sacrifice his ship so that the next ship, or the next one, might have a chance. A wall was not one stone, but many. The battle barge was approaching the dockyards, seemingly intent on dealing with them once and for all. Dutch did not intend to let it do so unchallenged.
All power to forward batteries! As soon as he gets in range, fire!
Servitors murmured their acquiescence. One squalled and slumped as flames crawled up its withered form. Its yellow tabard crackled as it twitched in its death throes. Dutch paid it no heed. There was still an optimum number remaining. If necessary, he could run the bridge himself. Auger feeds showed the enemy vessel powering up its forward batteries. It was going to be a stand-down, a straight-ahead brawl, with the toughest ship emerging victorious. He smiled, despite the increased probability of his imminent demise. If the Sons of Dawn were good at one thing above all others, it was taking whatever the enemy doled out and paying them back twice over.
"Come on, then," he growled. "If it is to be done, let it be done well."
The two vessels closed the distance, batteries hammering silently. The first shot smashed aside what was left of the Capulus's shields. The second tore a canyon in the strike cruiser's hull. The strike cruiser returned fire to less effect. Dutch scanned the sensor feeds, trying to find a weak point, but the battle barge had held itself aloof from the worst of the orbital defences, allowing the rest of its fleet to take the punishment. The damage it had suffered was seemingly mostly cosmetic. He growled in frustration as another hit knocked out the Capulus's long-range sensor array. The deck shuddered, and he fought to hold on to his seat. A servitor was knocked sprawling as its cogitator station exploded. Smoke was thick on the air, and the Vox was buried beneath distortion. But the Capulus continued its approach, still firing. Proximity klaxons sounded, and a new tacticum display shimmered to life, alerting him to the approach of a second vessel, as large as the first. Dutch cursed.
All hands to evacuation stations!
There was no sense in condemning his brothers to death. If they could make it to the planet below, they'd stand a better chance of survival.
All hands to...
He trailed off, as explosions lit up the view screen. The battle barge shuddered beneath the impacts and began to come about. The Vox hissed and spat, and then a voice.
Pull back, Capulus! You have done your part! Now, Let us finish it. Who is this? Identify yourself,
Thatch demanded. As he spoke, he caught sight of the newcomer at last, a second battle barge, but this one was a familiar wight. His heart leapt with a sudden hope. Laughter filled the vox, wild and savage.
The white scars have returned, sons of Dawn, and Almes will not fall while we live.
Chapter 26 97-0000 Almes, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Torag came to slowly, his gaze full of red. He blinked, trying to clear the blood from his vision. He felt no pain, but knew something was wrong. Fire licked at him. He turned in his control cradle and saw nothing save flames and smoke. He closed his eyes and shook his head, trying to clear it. The last thing he recalled was swooping to attack the word-bearers as they climbed the steps to the Cardinal's gate. But they had been prepared. Brief flashes of that last moment clung to him, of red-skinned abominations falling through the air like rain, of a streak of light and the sudden cessation of movement. Metal popped in the heat. His armor systems were redlining. Red hair was dying. He felt the Storm Talon's brave spirit slipping away, even as he fumbled at the seals of his cradle. If he did not get out in time, its death would claim him as well. He drew his knife and hacked at the hoses and cables that tangled him. Sparks and lubricants spilled across his armor as he wrenched himself loose. He slammed his shoulder into the cracked canopy, trying to smash it from his frame. Eventually, it gave way, parting with a scream. He hauled himself from the wreckage. One of his legs wasn't working, but he forced himself erect. His augmetic hands twitched spasmodically, and the world swayed about him. He turned, seeking his brothers. Another Storm Talon lay some distance away, scattered in burning chunks along the upper steps. But of the rest, he saw no sign. Perhaps they had retreated. Or perhaps they had not made it to the steps. He staggered away from the wreckage. His visor was cracked, and he could feel his battle plate servos acting sluggishly. There was blood in his mouth, in his armor. He looked down. A chunk of shrapnel jutted from his torso. The wound had sealed around it, but every movement he made caused it to open anew. He reached for it.
I wouldn't.
The voice was evil, a purr, like that of some great hunting cat. Torag looked up and saw a towering figure in red armor, stalking up the steps towards him through the smoke.
I am impressed that you survived, brother. A wreck like that would have killed a lesser warrior.
Torag said nothing. He knew instinctively that this was the cause of it all, before him. The Arch Abomination. The warrior drew closer, and Torag saw other red forms rising up through the smoke, their baroque battle plate adorned with filthy sigils and strange runes. He did not retreat. Could not. Would not. He was the hunter, and they the prey. That had not changed. He wished he had a weapon, even just a knife.
I saw you above, I think, hunting my troops through the sky. Beautiful, if unfortunate.
The traitor legionary sighed.
You will die soon, I think.
Better men than you have said the same. I am still here.
Torag forced his hands to cease their twitching.
I have been burned and beaten, drowned and hanged.
The abomination studied him for a moment. Have you ever had your soul flayed from your bones? He asked. Torag could hear the smile in his words and yearned to lunge at him. But even as he contemplated it, lanky shapes emerged from the smoke, prowling among the word-bearers like wolves. Demons. The traitor extended his hand.
You do not have to die, you know.
What purpose would it serve? Warriors of your caliber are not meant for lonely graves, but for glories eternal. I can give you that, brother.
We are not brothers,
Torag said. The traitor lowered his hand. No, perhaps not. His hand fell to the blade at his side. Then, perhaps I can give you a worthy death, at least. Kneel. Torag laughed, though it pained him. The word-bearer sighed, as if he'd expected it. Very well, he said softly. Demons paced forward, their steaming blades raised. Torag nodded.
I dreamt that an eagle circled a mountain peak and fell from the sky.
He peered up at the spires, rising far above.
That's sort of a mountain, I suppose.
He looked at the word-bearers and their inhuman allies, and deliberately tore the shrapnel from his midsection. He brandished it like a knife.
Well, come on then, I don't have all day.
He laughed as they came for him. And then the eagle fell and knew no more. The Pilgrim's Gate had fallen, and the enemy had begun to shell the cathedral palace. Ord watched it begin from where he crouched behind a half-shattered pillar. Blood stained his face and arm, and one of his hearts had ceased its beating. But he felt no pain, only anger. The siege tanks had blown open the gates and mounted the steps. Thus elevated, they had begun to bombard the distant spires of the cathedral palace. Word-bearers and mortal slaves moved among the tanks, dragging rubble into makeshift defensive positions that offended Ord with their sloppiness. They were digging in, preparing for an attack. He looked around. The shrine the surviving defenders had taken shelter in lay just south of the gate. It had been struck by debris, and its roof had collapsed. The tall, stained-glass windows, once depicting the triumphs of the Kabalevsky clan, had shattered, and multicoloured fragments littered the cracked floor. Pillars slumped at odd angles, and statues had toppled from their plinths, providing improvised defence works. The demons were mostly gone. After breaching the defences, the great mass of them had flooded upwards into Hightown, leaving the Pilgrim's Gate to the forces following behind. Some had remained, though, eager to claim the skulls of the survivors. These capered and shrieked out in the street, as human slaves celebrated with them. Great bells clanged atop crude standards, and mutants with faces like squirming masses of worms or wolfish jaws howled in joy. They beat drums made from newly flayed flesh, and cast the skulls of the dead into tottering pyramids. Some few fired at Ord's position, doing just enough to keep the survivors pinned in their shelter. The demons dancing among them twitched and flickered, like hololithic images suffering interference. As the mortal celebrants spilled blood from their own gorged flesh, the demons solidified, lapping at the offerings with greedy need, as if they were starving. Sometimes the creatures were too greedy and bore down an unlucky mortal, devouring them even as they shrieked in ecstatic agony.
What are they doing?
Ord looked down. Regulator Fane crouched nearby, her helm missing, her face bruised and bloody. The enforcer's armor was battered and stained, and she clutched her shotgun as if it were a holy relic. She stared at the demons, her eyes wide. She was on the verge of panic, her breath coming in sharp, gasping bursts. He could smell the fear seeping from her pores.
I never believed in them. Not really,
she spoke in a hushed monotone.
Nor should you have, Ord said simply.
In days gone by, such knowledge would have earned her death, or worse. But times had changed. The galaxy had split like an infected wound, and all manner of foulness had spilled out. Now, demons had raged through the streets of Terra itself, and all the old certainties had been upended. He could not say whether that was a good thing or not.
Belief makes some evil stronger. We are lucky, in a way, that we fight them here, rather than elsewhere.
What do you mean?
He looked down at her.
This world was built on faith. I think maybe they are not so strong here as they might be elsewhere.
They seem strong enough to me, she said, and he could see the fear on her face, in her eyes.
But she was here. They were here. Enforcers and soldiers manned the rubble, as if it were a palisade. Most of them were wounded. They had stood, and a part of him was proud of them, proud to die with them.
They're going to kill us, aren't they?
Yes, Ault said.
She closed her eyes, and he realized she was praying. Ault looked away, giving her as much privacy as he was able. He watched the seething riot of demons and mortals, picking out the leaders among the latter, the ones exhorting their followers, gesticulating towards the battered defenders. Some were even singing. Past this lunatic cacophony, Ord could see crimson siege vehicles grinding across the transitway. The word-bearers seemed content to leave the slaughter to their slaves, both human and otherwise. And why shouldn't they? Ord thought. There was no threat here. His brothers were dead, save for Kaln, who lay nearby, missing a leg and most of an arm. The survivors had erected makeshift defences from the rubble, but it was a poor substitute for a bulwark. Ord could smell their fear, their shame. They'd failed, and that failure bit deep. Ord knew, because he felt it as well. All their preparations, all their work, for nothing. The bulwarks had fallen in mere hours. The demons had not ceased or retreated. They had come on and on, in an untiring wave of unnatural bodies, screaming in hate. What could a warrior do against such as that? Even a warrior of the Adeptus Astartes?
They're coming again, brother,
Kaln wheezed from behind him. He lay flat, his good hand holding a bolt gun steady atop a fallen statue. Ord peered around the pillar and saw a handful of leathery red shapes loping through the clouds of dust that now choked the air. Celebrations finished, they had decided to make the kill. Mortals ran with them, howling frenziedly. The demons seemed encouraged by and encouraging of these efforts, as if they somehow fed off the madness of the humans and mutants mingled among them. Ord checked the ammunition counter on his helmet's display. A few thousand rounds left for his heavy bolter, plus what he'd been able to salvage before the defences had collapsed.
Fain, I require assistance, he said.
You seem to be doing fine, she said.
If my rate of fire dips, we risk them overwhelming us. Bring those ammunition crates and help me hook the feet together.
She didn't argue further. Instead, she slid back and called out for two others to help her open the crates and drag the heavy ammunition feeds to Ord. Swiftly, he hooked them together, looping the excess over his shoulders, where it wouldn't become tangled or jam the weapon. After a final check to ensure that the feeds would be unimpeded, he jerked his head, indicating for Fane and the others to withdraw into the shrine.
Fall back. They will be at the steps in moments.
And what about you? She demanded.
I have work to do.
Ord braced his foot against the rubble and raised his heavy bolter. As soon as the targeting runes on his display flashed green, he opened fire. The roar of the weapon was loud in the shrine, and fragments of stained glass rattled across the stones at his feet. The ammunition feeds rattled against his armour as he let the barrel drift from left to right, playing across the approaching demonic ranks. Whatever their nature, few things could endure such a withering storm. Demons erupted in gouts of ichor and came apart like bad dreams. Mortals fell, their bodies ripped asunder. Yet still, they came. The ammunition counter on his helm display shrank steadily, as he swept the weapon back and forth, like a reaper's scythe. A demon, its lanky frame covered in a score of wounds, sprang up the steps of the shrine, jaws wide, blade gleaming. He rammed the barrel of the heavy bolter into its chest and let rip, reducing it to tatters of stinking excrescence. but more of them press close, and mortals as well. Most were armed only with the crudest of hand weapons, but some had scavenged firearms. Lazraun sang off the curved panes of his battle plate as he fired. The steps ran red, a waterfall of carnage. Bodies fell, piling in the broken walls. And still they came, driven to frenzied heights by the demons that still danced on the broken street, or lapped at the blood of the fallen. Only a few of the creatures were even attempting to enter the shrine, as if they were content to allow the mortals to die in their place. Ord was pressed back by weight of numbers. Cultists squeezed past him and ran howling into the shrine. He heard Kaun's bolter roar and the sound of the mortal defenders following suit. A screaming man, his face stained with a cross of blood, spat obscenities as he hacked at the seals of Ord's leg armor with a knife. Ord swept him off and kept firing. 200 rounds. 150. 100. 50. 25. When the heavy bolter ran dry, he swung it like a club. It was awkward, but satisfyingly heavy. Bodies pressed against him, climbing him, hacking and stabbing. Blades broke on his armor, but others pierced his seals, drawing blood. He could see nothing but hands and teeth, smell nothing but blood and bolt pistols. He heard them, recognized the sound instantly. Bodies fell away from him. He saw demons clinging to the pillars like lizards, their skull-like faces turned towards the western end of the shrine, where white and black shapes moved. Space Marines, scouts and reavers, loping through the shrine. A demon lunged for him, blade raised. A shot felled it. Two warriors, one in white, one in black, moved to finish it, as it screeched and rose. He recognized the former, the White Scar Scout known as Rakan. The other was a Raven Guard, a Primaris Reaver. They shot it again and again until it faltered at last, seeming to deflate. Back to back, they fired into the crowd of cultists that swirled around them. Ord disentangled himself from his heavy bolter and drew his sidearm. The bolt pistol kicked in his grip as he fought his way towards them. Behind him, he could see that Fane and the others had been joined by other mortals, not soldiers, but gangers and civilians, all armed, all fighting. With some relief, he saw that Kaun was alive as well, though even more bloody than before. He'd rolled into a sitting position and was reloading his bolt gun with one hand.
"My thanks," Ord rumbled as he joined Rakan. "Your assistance was well-timed. Don't thank me,"
Rakan growled. He indicated the Reaver.
"It was Solaro's idea."
"Conservation of resources," Solaro said. "They're retreating."
The cultists were falling back. Their frenzy had seemingly evaporated as quickly as it had risen.
"Not retreating. Regrouping," Rakan corrected.
"Listen."
Ord heard it. A shrill whine, growing louder with every passing moment. He looked at Rakan.
"Is that..."
Rakan hurried towards the front of the shrine, his scouts following him. They spread out along the wall. Ord glanced around and saw Regulator Fane crouch next to Kaun. She met his gaze and nodded. He hesitated and then turned back.
"Drop pods,"
Solaro said. Ord saw them, slow streaks piercing the sky. The whistle of their descent was impossible to ignore. The question was, who did they belong to? He turned his attention to the enemy. They had seen the drop pods as well. Rakan muttered something in Korchin, but before Ord could ask him what it meant, the first drop pod slammed down, raising clouds of dust from the already broken streets. A Lucius pattern, Ord realized. Larger and heavier than the normal sort, lacking internal systems and armament. Pneumatic seals hissed in release as the pod blossomed. Something massive stomped down the gangplate, concealed by a cloud of smoke and dust. Ord heard the telltale whir of an assault cannon warming up. A slow smile spread across Rakan's face.
"At last,"
the White Scar murmured.
"What vermin is this I see before me?"
a Vox amplified voice bellowed.
"What rough beast dares face a hero of Dragaris?"
A demon roared in reply, claws flexing. It reeled as the newcomer's assault cannon thundered. The shots punched into its scaly hide, drawing out spurts of smoke and ichor. The newcomer descended to the street, firing as it came. Demons staggered under the constant stream of shots, turning this way and that, as if seeking escape. Mortals died in droves, cut to ribbons by the withering volley. The familiar white shape of a dreadnought lumbered into view through the smoke, totems rattling against its sarcophagus. Rucken pounded a fist against Ord's shoulder plate.
Ha! I knew I recognized that howl. Malamir is here. Now we will see some death.
Excellent, Solaro said. I was getting bored. The air shuddered as more drop pods slammed down along the street. Mortal cultists scattered, falling back towards the line of siege tanks. Ord could see red armored forms hefting weapons. Heavy bolters roared at the newly arrived drop pods, even as the latter unleashed their own armament, clearing space for their passengers to disembark. He lost sight of them as the dreadnought, Malamir, rampaged through his field of vision.
Stop gibbering!
Malamir bellowed as he slammed into a demon.
Accept death with courage, if your kind even understands such a thing!
His talon crackled with lethal energies as he drove his opponent back against a pillar and pried the creature's body apart. More of them leapt onto his hull, hacking at him with brass blades. Malamir swung his assault cannon around and fired, blowing another off its feet. His talon plucked a struggling creature from his hull and slammed it into the ground, reducing the lanky form to a mess of pulp and alien meat. White scars advanced through the smoke, clearing the street with brutal swiftness as they moved towards the dug-in siege tanks.